SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races, about 10 minutes in, and we'll spend a nice extended segment with Steve Cook from the NTRA. And, of course, Steve's been on with us before, and we've talked about the Safety and Integrity Alliance and the important work that it does accrediting the racetracks with a code of standards. And I just sent out the link to the 99 pages that make up the elements of the code of standards. Steve, happy new year, first of all.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for having me on the show. Happy new year to you. I can't believe it's already 2017.
That's unbelievable. And we're 10 days in already. And 10 days in, and we had an interesting topic that falls right into your arena. This came up last week when Natalie Voss won the Eclipse for her enterprise writing in the Pollock at the PollockReport.com about brain injury. And then Tony Black, Tony talked about, as somebody that's been in a jock's room for five decades, he talked about the potential for, or the lack of, maybe for an extended period, a system to evaluate concussions. He said the first 10 or 12 that he had or more, he doesn't, you know, other than a doc looking in your eyes and waving a finger. And so that conversation broached the whole element of what you do accrediting the racetracks and the standards for jockey safety. And when you look at this 100-page brochure, you can see that a lot of attention goes into the riders and keeping them healthy and safe.
Yeah, it's so I guess a little bit of background for those that are a little bit less familiar with what is the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance. Interrupt me if you think that's not
no, that's fine
here, Steve. But, you know, back in 2009, 2008, we'd kind of hit a low point in the industry. And we, across the industry, we all realized we better start having some answers and some processes to identify what are the correct operating standards at the racetrack, at the racing commissions, looking out for the jockeys, basically all the horse and human participants. So what happened was the Safety Integrity Alliance was born, and the idea was let's create an industry code of standards, operating racetrack safety and integrity standards, and ask racetracks to be accountable to that code of standards through an accreditation process. So I'm essentially a one-man army. I'm the executive director of the program, but I maintain this code of standards. And then what I do is I put together a team of experts to go to the racetracks that participate with us to review top to bottom the operations at these racetracks and assess how they achieve the code of standards, give them some thoughts on where they could do things differently or connect them with other people. Because the fact of the matter, we've got 24 accredited racetracks across the U.S., accounting for about 75% of the handle, 90% of the graded stakes. And so the fact of the matter is I've got these team of experts and myself. I've been to all of these racetracks and more. And we've kind of created this entity that's, in some cases, has seen it all. And eventually down the road, I'm actually going to be honestly, you know, in my gig, I'll be able to actually say, you know what, guys, I've seen it all because I've been to every single one of these racetracks. And so we kind of became this powerful agent where we can introduce different operators at the racetracks to each other across the country, going, you know, that guy over there has a best practice, and that guy over there has a best practice, and you know, who else can I introduce you to, or what clever ideas can I give you? Because the interesting thing, all these racetracks are facing the same problems, but they'll think they're unique problems until we're able to introduce people to each other sometimes, or resources to each other. So really interesting gig, and what it's created is this code of standards document that you're talking about, all almost 100 pages of it. And You know, it's a pretty heady read. It's not something you take to the beach for light reading. But I would urge really anybody in the industry to download this thing from our website sometime, ntraalliance.com. It's on there pretty prominently. And thumb through there and see what it's got in there. It's a really nice – it becomes a nice little manual for racing operations at a racetrack. You know, if you own a horse, if you train a horse, what are the things you should be expecting of the racetrack you choose to take your racehorse to? And then from the racetrack side, you just compare yourselves to each other. How are we doing? What are some things we could look into, and how can the alliance help?
Well, and when you just look, all you have to do is look at even the table of contents to get an understanding of the depth of areas that this touches on. And when it comes to, you know, the subheading, the safety equipment and safer racing environment, there are so many things that have been standardized as part of your work, Steve, and NTRA's work when it comes to the accreditation. And even if we start with something that is completely simple, the emergency track warning system that has spread throughout the industry in very short order, which is the lighting, the siren and the lamps that are placed all around the oval, that is now, I think, pretty much spread everywhere. And you know, this is something that wasn't standardized, and it, you know, there was a siren, but not every rider can hear the siren at every point on the racetrack the way they used to be. And this has improved safety for riders in the mornings nationwide.
Yeah, so actually that one's a pretty good example to use about how this process works. So we're pretty careful with the code of standards. We've got this advisory board, and that kind of steers the code of standards, and it's kind of carefully made up of a true cross section of the industry. What we have is representatives on there from all the major stakeholder groups. You know, you got someone on there from the horsemen are represented through the National HPPA and the THA. You know, there's Dion Benson's on there with the RMTC. There's always someone on there from Breeders' Cup, from NTRA, the Jockey Club. There's some Racing Commission representatives, some veterinary AAEP is represented on there from the veterinary aspect. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting others. Jocks Guild, certainly the jockeys are represented. And the point is, we, through an advisory board process of those people, we make sure, first of all, the things that are going to go into the code really are thought through from all the different angles. But the other thing is, we're pretty careful not to create the rules and the protocols for the industry. We shouldn't be inventing the rules. I don't want to go to the racetrack and have to defend, you know, some guy saying, well, you know, you just invented that rule. It sounds arbitrary. I'm not sure it's the right thing. We are always very careful to cling to in the code of standards that is based on industry adopted standards. So you have the Racing Commissioners International, they have their model rules. So a whole lot of this is driven through the Racing Commissioners International model rules process. And then when there's not a perfect model rule, you know, certainly that's, again, why we have that second standard, the advisory board at the NTRA, to make sure that it really is a concept that represents what truly is right, not just someone's, you know, some current initiative that hasn't been thought all the way through. So you take the racetrack emergency warning system. And those have existed in a few places, in many places, for quite some time. Just to be clear on what the racetrack emergency warning system is, so you, in the morning, you might get a loose horse drops his rider, run around the track loose, or someone gets hurt. There's various versions of how it can work, but someone is watching the track, typically either the outriders, the clockers, in the mornings, in the afternoons is probably the steward. Someone's watching this. They see the thing happen. They can flip on a siren that can be heard all the way across the track, or there's versions where there are strobe lights at each pole around the track, and you depending on the incident, you turn on a combination of these things, and that way all the other numerous riders and horses on the track, okay, something's going on. I better pull up, look around me. Let's not run each other over, and it gives the outrider and the ambulance a chance to clear up the situation, and then, of course, an all clear can be signaled, and you go back about your business. So these things kind of existed. Probably the most clever one is Glenn Kozak kind of evolved a system where it's a combination of strobe lights, solar-powered strobe lights on each pole and the siren, and that's in place at New York. There's one in place at Keeneland and some other places. And that was recognized over time. This is a very critical system. So through the industry processes, it got baked into the code. It became a RCI, Racing Commissioners International Model Rule, and at that point, it then is full adopted into the Code of Standards. And then once it's in the Code of Standards, that's where we get into motion, my team, where we're going to all these different racetracks going, okay, guys, here's this new standard. Let's get you there. We have a certain amount of time. We need to bring you up to this standard, and it causes that evolution at all tracks. So the full-scale racetrack emergency warning system as we want it to be isn't everywhere, but it's evolving in that direction, and we're going to get it there over the next period of time.
As part of these practices, and obviously there are certain elements, and Tony and I had this conversation last week, Steve, and you know Tony's concern as a lifelong career rider, working in the mornings and then riding in the afternoons, is the attention to detail and the you know the opportunity to transfer know-how and certain experiences and then put it in place around the country. One thing that he and I discussed that came up was the circumstance in New York when Davey Cohen got kicked in the lower paddock area, the down, you know, below the track level. And it took an extended period. It took 10, 12 minutes to get somebody to the ambulance because the horses weren't on the track yet. And they were less than prepared to have an ambulance attend to a rider injured in the paddock. So there are things that are going to happen for the first time anywhere. And, until that happens, nobody's prepared for it per se. But once it happens, it then becomes an awareness that can be applied industry-wide. Talk about, finding out things that hadn't necessarily occurred in certain venues until they occur.
You know, that's a useful example, and those incidents kind of cause, there's a section in there that talks about paddock safety and security. Do you have a plan to manage something that happens in the paddock? I'll give you an even more interesting example of that that's different. December 2014, I think I'm getting that date right, there was a really tragic incident at Charlestown where a horse drops his rider. Must have been a root race. A horse drops its rider coming out of the gate. Now they're I'm mixing two examples. But in this example, the horse drops his rider, and now I think the horse turns around and is running the wrong direction. It runs backwards into the field.
Sure.
And that caused a sudden great industry awareness of, oh, my goodness, have we all thought about, all across North America, have we all thought about how we're going to call off a horse race if something
right.
like that happens?
Yep.
Or an alternate thing that can happen. And I experienced this one, actually, when I was my background, I was vice president of racing at Woodbine Racetrack.
Sure.
And in those days, we had an incident where a jockey gets hurt coming out of the gate in a root race, a mile and a must have been a mile and a 16th race. And so now you got a jockey laying there. You don't want to just pick him up and drag him away, but yet here comes this field of horses coming around the backstretch. What are we going to do? So you better have a way, we realized, with incidents like that all of a sudden, oh, we better have a way to call off horse races. And that also drove the evolution of the racetrack emergency
sure.
warning system, as well as some thoughts on, do you racetrack have a protocol to how you communicate starting at the steward stand, we better call off this horse race.
Absolutely. And you've also got the situation simply, very simply, having the tractor stall and the tractor can't move a starting gate. We've had plenty
of
those.
We've seen some of those where all of a sudden you're looking around going, why hasn't the starting gate gotten out of the way? And that's a pretty scary scenario. And so you better have thought through exactly what happens in that moment so everybody can snap to and do their thing rather than standing around panicking.
Steve, I want to fold in the injury, specifically the story from last week that prompted the discussion with Tony, and this gets into the clearance by the track medical staff in terms of letting a rider come back either same day or days later. And Natalie Voss's award-winning story, which focused on Gwen Jackson and the long-term damage that she is suffering from what is presumed to be the series of concussions. Tony said he's had countless, and he's got some memory loss that is affected. One of the things, or two of the things that have come up out of that piece included the impact system that we've all heard so much about with the NFL and with hockey has adopted this, the NHL, and that is the immediate post-concussion assessment and cognitive testing. And in terms of standardization of this, as well as standardization of the best injury and preventive safety equipment in terms of things like the ASTM, the American Society for Testing and Materials, that helmet that is going to be the best as opposed to the Caliente, the very popular Caliente helmet. Talk a little bit about what can be done from your end to standardize these kinds of things across the entire industry.
Yeah, you actually gave me an awful lot to talk about there. Almost taking notes here for myself. First thing, I don't want to skip this opportunity to say Natalie Voss's article was really a fantastic piece. She's very talented. I congratulate her on that work and really look forward to all the things she's going to keep doing for the industry. I think our industry is going to really benefit from her stuff, so I'm glad you brought up that article. And in fact, I think she's receiving an Eclipse Award for
yes,
that article.
Yes, she is.
For talking
yes.
about the same one. So congratulations to her, and she really did an important thing there. The Safety and Integrity Alliance and the Code of Standards really is, in the industry, a jockey's very best friend. I'd say the Guild is their best friend, and we're certainly another one in that circle. We've got an entire section of the code that is dedicated to the health and welfare of the jockeys. And then even outside of that section are the safer racing and training environment, and really, as I think about it, as you get into any of the issues throughout the Code of Standards, all of these things are keeping a jockey from hitting the dirt. That's the end game, is we protect our horses and we protect our jockeys, and therefore we protect our horses and jockeys because they protect each other. The whole Section 4 of the Code of Standards, that's jockey health and welfare. Outside of that section, all the way back in Section 2, that's where we talk about safety vests and safety helmets. And let's talk about – I'm glad you bring up the safety vests and safety helmets. I mean, that's an example of some really critical learning in the industry over the course of the last decade, is that, oh, my goodness, our helmets and vests can always be better. First of all, we, back in the day, had to make sure we were actually wearing them. Nowadays, one of my key issues is, now you're wearing them, make sure the darn things are zipped up and buckled. I'm constantly going to the racetracks telling people that I see without these things buckled and zipped is that thing's going to be useless to you if it's not there when you need it most. So just sort of a soapbox issue for me. But adopting those ASTM standards on the vests, those ASTM standards on the helmets, so critical. And remember that a helmet first is about preventing that skull fracture. Let's get you through the incident. They're not, the answer to concussions, although long-term, there's a ton of research into making these things better and better at preventing and protecting against concussions. But having in the Code of Standards, here are your helmet standards based on the RCI model rules, and we can go track to track really pushing and promoting these standards and showing people that this is the right way to go, get rid of those obsolete, terrible, Caliente helmets. Do not wear those things. They will actually set you backwards in an incident. Dr. Carl Maticola over at the University of Kentucky has some really excellent scientific evidence that actually suggests that a Caliente helmet banging your head off the rail might actually do more harm than good in wearing it. So we as an industry, wherever those Calientes are left, and I know I see them show up still on racetracks in the mornings here and there, I would ask horsemen that see their exercise boys come down the shed row with a Caliente helmet for your own liability's sake, much less that poor exercise boys, get that helmet off his head and put him into a proper helmet. within the jockey health and welfare section of the code, we address a number of things, and it would take an awfully long show to kind of really walk through what everything means. But, you know, we address things like what are your protocols as far as having an ambulance on track and available during morning training, an ambulance or ambulances, I should say, in the afternoon. What are your ambulance protocols? Are you providing advanced life support services? What are your first aid services? You know, have you really thought through in a clear and logical way can your facilities really demonstrate a clear, comprehensive plan to, have you thought through providing timely, quality medical care in case a jockey or another participant is injured? There's things asking the racetrack to think through, you know, what are the hospitals you work with? Do you have trauma one resources in your area, trauma two? How are you going to get them there? What's your relationship with the city emergency services? We talk about providing insurance, emergency jockey accident insurance to, you know, $1 million per incident and more, and so many other things that really I just encourage everybody that has an interest in kind of reading this thing and understanding what this all means and get a racetrack to have thought through. You still there, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
My phone.
Absolutely.
But what's not in the code where you're going is you're kind of asking about concussions, and this gets back to how the code of standards is supposed to evolve. And back in 2014, the Safety Integrity Alliance was working with the Jocks Guild and so many other involved stakeholders on, okay, what are the industry standard protocols for managing concussions? And it got very complicated. There's a lot of science that needs to be understood there. There's a lot of protocols to be put in place. And I think the discovery was over time was, you know, it wasn't model rules ready. It wasn't industry-wide adoption ready. We got to still be working towards exactly how does this work. Because don't forget, you know, with these complicated protocols, there's a high resource demand, and at the same time, you want to be very sure if you're going to start pulling a jockey off his mounts and limiting his ability to, you know, make his living and ply his trade, you want to be very, very confident in your protocols and processes. So what it kicked off, there's some really, really cool things happening at different racetracks and some different pilot studies going out there, and I mentioned Dr. Carl Maticola over at University of Kentucky is doing some excellent research driving, okay, what is the future of concussion-type testing and protocols at the racetrack? How is that really going to work? So that when this thing is adopted all the way across the industry, we know we have the right program doing exactly the right things. So what's happened is this really exciting evolution. There's a few tracks that I work with, like Golden Gate Fields. Dr. Seth Tallett at Golden Gate's just an amazing resource to their industry out there. He's actually using, you talk about the SCAT-3, and we can talk a little bit more about what is, you know, SCAT-3 concussion testing protocols. Monmouth Park is well on their way, working with how do we make SCAT-3 work at Monmouth. Indiana Grand has some things off the ground. They're pretty, very engaged over Indiana Grand. They're excellent operators. And I'll tell you who's really two locations really leading the herd. Maryland has some active concussion management and return to ride protocols that they've got this group called MedStar over there, and they are absolutely setting the bar in the industry. And then in Kentucky, through Dr. Maticola, the Jockeys Guild, they orchestrated the industry. The NTRA donated to this amongst a bunch of others in the business. There's a ongoing pilot project at all of the Kentucky racetracks where there's a PhD student at the racetracks that is doing, they call it the Kentucky Concussion Management Protocol Pilot Study. And it's a multi-year project where all of the jockeys are put into this concussion protocol where they go through some baseline testing at the beginning of the year so that if they may hit their head out on the racetrack later on in the year, they can be assessed against those baseline protocols. And then they enter into this concussion management / return to ride program. So what's going to happen longer term is these combined forces at all these different racetracks, in particular this pilot study at Kentucky and the stuff going on in Maryland, it's really going to, I think our answer to concussion concerns in the industry are going to evolve very rapidly in the year 2015, 16, and 17. And I think we'll end up adopting something very, very well squared away into the code of standards, you know, somewhere in the relatively near future. And the industry's, it's not a big public thing because we want to get it exactly right. But until we get there, we don't want to, you know, just kind of shoot from the hip.
Which leads to a question. I want to get back to the impact system and creating a base of jockey cognitive function. But in terms of the checklist that's involved here, looking at the table of contents and all the areas of execution necessary for accreditation, when you do an inspection, how many, I don't want to call them violations, call them compliances, let's say, how many compliance shortcomings will keep a racetrack from being accredited?
That's hard to answer. I describe it as meaningful achievement of the code of standards. And, you know, the 24 racetracks we're working with, these are really engaged, talented operators that all want the very best thing. So the tracks that I'm working with set a pretty high bar for what it is to achieve the code of standards. There's things within the code of standards that are absolute deal breakers for me. There's other things that we the track's kind of operating at, okay, that's good, but we become a process of, but we're going to help you make it better. And, you know, actually, even though it's not in the code of standards, these concussion protocols kind of fall into that zone. As I'm going to every racetrack right now, I'm talking to, or my team is talking to the stakeholders at B, going, you know, this CAT 3 stuff exists. They're doing it over at Maryland and Kentucky and you know, there's other racetracks, Indiana Grand, Golden Gate. Let us help you connect you with those resources and make you better and better at doing this one thing. So really, the tracks in the code of stand in the Safety and Integrity Alliance are substantially achieving the code of standards, except some gray area here or there that may have more to do with local local specifics more than they do, you know, to a racetrack's desire to do things right or not. And what it becomes is the Safety and Integrity Alliance becomes this best practices continuing improvement thing, where each time we're going back to the track, we're helping push them along on whatever it is, that new agenda or that persistent, that nagging agenda.
When it comes to something like the impact system, and as you mentioned, you know, where there's protocols that are already established and in place, what would prevent, or why would there be any resistance from any track operator to assure that any rider that may have suffered a concussion is 100% recovered and is not coming back too soon, which it's basically been proven that is as important as diagnosing the concussion itself, is making sure that the brain is as fully healed. But I mean, what would prevent this? I mean, why would nobody would resist? So why is there any hesitation? Why is this not in place virtually at every racetrack?
So what'll happen is, I think the development up until now has been hindered with, what is exactly the right protocol? Are you absolutely confident you're not pulling a jockey off of his next mount when really, he may or may not be okay to ride that mount? I think the resistance is that the entire industry hasn't agreed on this protocol, including the jockeys. I mean, we have to have the jockeys on board with this, because if your local jockeys colony doesn't agree and most jockey colonies do, they just, what it is we're hung up on the inside processes, exactly how it works, what is the science here, are we doing the right things? I think that's what I mean by the rapid evolution that's going on out there right now with these participating racetracks is going to cause something in relatively short order to take a hold. Once the industry has agreed on these protocols, I don't think there's racetracks out there that will actively resist the new industry-adopted protocol.
Well, and you would hope not, and certainly I know Terry Meeks and the Guild have called for it, and it just seems like a logical and fairly achievable goal. There's so many things that we could literally rip from today's headlines as it happens, Steve, and that includes just looking down. Infectious disease management. Here we are facing a circumstance in Louisiana where there is an enormous cross-pollinization in terms of racetracks and training centers and mm-hmm. farms. And, I mean, this is a circumstance that you can really tell people are on pins and needles. It looked like we were maybe getting through and another pair of positives on Sunday. This is obviously an area that falls right into accreditation arena.
Right. It absolutely does. And I guess the point I need to make is I would want everybody to understand that the industry is actually very actively engaged on the concussion answer, and I believe it's coming soon, and it's just a matter of you know, putting this through all the rigor of you know, if we're going to standardize a protocol, then it needs to have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. It has to be right, and then it'll get there. And that's how everything got into the code of standards, is it went through that same rigorous protocol. We want to get it right, not wrong, and keep having to revisit and refix and get it. Getting something with like concussion wrong can send us in a very wrong direction, by the way, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So I would actually urge everybody to understand that with concussion management, we are well down the trail. The industry takes it very seriously, and I think you'll see something in the relatively near future.
Well, all these areas, and we basically started this conversation somewhat when I reached out to you and you set us up with Don Stewart regarding the fire safety. And we had an amazing conversation before Christmas week. And that got a huge reception, Steve. I mean, there were so many people, racetrackers, as well as people on farms that were really appreciative of the attention. And similarly, there's so much in here that people just wouldn't even they wouldn't occur to you. I mean, the nooks and crannies that are involved in this.
For most of our horse racing public to read this document, they're going to think we're we go awfully deep into the weeds on many of these mm-hmm. issues. That said, those of us that are operating racetracks and doing these things for a living, those are all, every one of those things, and there is a critical element, and that's why we take them seriously.
In terms of the additional, you talked about the two dozen tracks you're working with. What about the tracks that aren't involved?
There are some tracks that I work with that aren't yet accredited, or they have some various hang-ups that would fall into my, my area of absolute requirements in the code of standards. But we're working with them, and we're going to get them there. And I'm connecting. The Alliance connects them with resources throughout the industry, and there's other groups that work with them, like the RMTC and the Jacks Guild, and just depending on what the issue is. So there are a handful of other tracks that work with me. We just can't quite get them on that on the map of accredited tracks. Unfortunately, there's plenty of racetracks that we are not working with. And there's various levels of reasons why they may or may not work with us. In some cases, they just really don't think they can. It's an open book test, is what we say. When you're looking at the code of standards and the application to get accredited, it's an open book test. And we're going to tend not to get the phone call from a racetrack that's not going to pass the open book test. On the other hand, other tracks have said, listen, we're doing all the right things. Leave us alone. We know how to run a racetrack. And I suppose that's fine. What troubles me on that aspect is that wouldn't it be very, very useful to you in case something goes wrong one day or you get called out to be able to say, well, you know what? Someone third party has reviewed that and agrees that we are doing all those right things that we think we are. My experience at most racetracks is – And this includes myself back when I was at Woodbine, my experience is that all of us operating racetracks really do want the right things. We are doing the right things, but you'd be surprised when a third party can come in and bring you some new best practice and make a suggestion and help you continuously improve. And that's a pretty good reason why I'd love to get to all the racetracks across North America. Why are we just doing those 20, why are we just publicizing those 24 actually accredited racetracks. Long term, where this industry really needs to get to is the safety and integrity code of standards ought to be a required document or program. You know, your racetrack should have to be accredited to operate or simulcast or be considered a class one operator. So we have to find ways to get there. It's interesting what Maryland did in recent West Virginia did in recent history. We worked with them for some time, helping them understand how could they actually put in a requirement that all of the West Virginia racetracks achieve the Alliance Code of Standards, and that's happening now. We are going to, in 2017, we're working with those racetracks, and we're going to get them accredited. And so that's the way the system can work. But long term, really, I would like to see the code of standards become a fairly rigid requirement rather than the current those who do well, it's a voluntary engagement process right now.
Is there a compliance officer at each racetrack, a point man that you deal with, or do you have to deal with different departments?
Well, it can depend on the issue, but overwhelmingly, every racetrack, I know the key guy, and the key guy knows me, and we can burn up the telephone and the air miles, for that matter, pretty significantly as we execute on the various things. But yes, every racetrack has overwhelmingly, it's going to be either the GM or the main racing guy, whether, depending on the track, whether it's the director of racing or the vice president of racing. But it's going to be the key guy that really has some influence at his operation and oversees, the broad swath of the racing operations areas.
Well, Steve, as we mentioned and have been brought up every time you and I have spoken, this is one more example that I try to bring these kinds of behind-the-scenes efforts to light. They're ongoing, they're tireless, and they're vital. And looking for uniformity, this is another example of the way in which the industry answers that call, and it's been successfully answering it. And just because people don't see it doesn't mean that it's not happening. And very important to, to get people to understand that in all of these areas, aftercare, safety and health of jockeys, medication and testing, safety equipment and racing environment, injury and fatality reporting and prevention, everything involved in here, I invite people to go and you don't have to read all 90 plus pages, but go and look at this to understand the breadth and the challenge. This is a enormous undertaking every single day at racetracks across North America. We liken the racetrack to a circus, except that there's so many more working parts at the circus than what we have. We've got so many more things happening, and it's just a 24/7, 365 that requires everyone's everyone working together. And I applaud the work, Steve, as always. And every time we've got an opportunity to have these kinds of discussions, I'm happy to do it.
Well, that's fantastic. It's very challenging work we do here, and actually across the industry. As you say, there are so many more things that happen. The problem is we don't do very good enough jobs talking about the excellent things that are being done out there, the things that the RMTC does, the things that the Safety and Integrity Alliance does. There's things that the Jockeys Guild, the RCI, it just depends on the group and what they're doing. These are some pretty active entities with a bunch of really, really passionate people getting things done. And even at the individual racetrack level, really passionate people, these people live. We all live for horse racing, and so we're all wanting to do the right things and look out for each other. And the challenge is it's a difficult very complicated story to tell. The issues that we deal with at the Alliance, very complicated stories to tell. And so we end up probably not telling the story good enough. So your assistance, I'm always happy to be on your radio show or make any connections I possibly can for you, because that's very helpful for us to tell our story. But even without telling the story, on a personal level, it is really rewarding work. Every racetrack we go to, I come away from that track with a real sense of pride, because I know that we've made a difference there in some way. There is never a racetrack where we haven't connected them with some resource or helped with some issue where we've left the place better than when we came to it. And that can be a pretty rewarding existence.
Without a doubt. And it may not even be something that people see that who knows, saves a rider's life, saves an exercise rider, whatever. A horse.
Well, that's just it, Steve. I mean, I know for a fact. In fact, I can even think of specific moments in time where we have saved a life, but no one ever knows because the incident didn't happen.
Exactly. That's the perfect scenario. It can happen in a moment. Whether it's on the backstretch or whether it's on the racetrack. I mean, this is a dangerous profession for everybody involved, down to outriders, down to patrons. I mean, even something as simple as fences.
Right.
You've got 1,200-pound animals being led through at Saratoga, being led through a backyard where there's 3-year-olds standing by the fence. I mean, it's miraculous, frankly, that we've never had a problem. I mean, those fences were rebuilt so that there's coverage, and if a horse starts the side kick or back kick, they're going to hit fence. People have to be on their toes every minute. I've seen people who work around horses their whole lives that have been injured severely, let their guard down for a second. Every bit of safety and precaution and alert that you can have is sometimes not enough.
Absolutely true. Yeah, always remain vigilant, and you'll be a lot better off.
Well, we're a lot better off for your work and everybody at NTRA, and certainly I appreciate, Steve, the time, and again, Don Stewart, who was really terrific last month, and whatever we can communicate, happy to do it. Best wishes for a great 2017.
Thanks so much, Steve. Best of luck in 2017, and thanks for having me on today.
Not at all. Steve Cook, everybody, and the NTRA, Safety Integrity Alliance, wanted to talk about the concussion protocols, and it feels like they're pressing forward, and certain venues are a little further ahead than others. We're further ahead than we expected, too. Let's take a break. Last of the morning, we'll come back and wrap it up and send you out into your Tuesday at the races. Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, Joey, what are you doing over there?
Mikey, not too much. Just betting the races with my new ExpressBet account and checking out the weather in Florida.
Florida, huh? You going on vacation?
I'm playing ExpressBet's $10,000 Pegasus Big Bet Sweepstakes. Just picture it. Me, down in Miami on January 28th, betting 10 grand on the World Cup. It don't get much better than that.
Yeah. Just one problem then. I'm pretty sure I'm the one that's winning that big bet.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I've been playing a lot lately, and I'm feeling pretty lucky. If I win, I think I'll take Vinny.
Vinny? You're taking Vinny? He doesn't even have an ExpressBet account.
He does now. Soon as he saw they're offering a $500 welcome bonus, he signed right up. That guy wouldn't pass up a good deal. I told him. Check out ExpressBet.com. It's the best way to play the race.
All righty then. I got some catching up to do. I better get back to betting on ExpressBet.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Hotline, 800-522-4700.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Everything good in my life has come from horses. As a kid, stories of horses carried my imagination through time and space. As a teenager, learning to become a jockey, horses took me to America's storied racetracks. As an adult, horses gave me the opportunity to compete outdoors in a major sport and to provide a good life for my family. I hope that horse lovers like me will support the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, whether by adopting, fostering, or sponsoring one of the nearly 1,000 horses in the TRF's national herd, or simply by making a donation. If you love racing, or if you just love horses, please help the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation in its mission to find a good life for horses when their racing days are through. Let's give back to the horses that have been so good to us.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Are you ready for the race day? It's Tuesday, so your choices are a little on the narrow front, but I told you, Philadelphia. You got those two maiden races. Let me thumb through here and find. Tomorrow, Gulfstream has got a couple of maiden races too, including, by the way, an interesting 3-year-old filly race going a mile and a 16th on the grass, and there's some breeding of note. Chad Brown sends one for the Ramses. It's kind of funny, actually. The Ramses have got Enchanting Kitten debuting. This is in the 6th tomorrow at Gulfstream, 4-1, Castellano and Chad. And what's funny is this is a full sibling to Shaba. And that, of course, Phil Gleaves had so much success with. And Shaba, Ramsey sold. This one they kept. Then there's Ginza coming back for Jim Karp. This is the full sister to Stephanie's Kitten. And Ramsey doesn't have this one. This is with Karp. And so kind of funny. And you got Kitten's Joys. They're going to line up next to each other. This is the race that I brought up with John Sheriffs before. Because Moonlit Cove, out of his star billing that he helmed. And, of course, for George Krikorian. Krikorian right now, I think he's got all. Does he have all his horses with Art Sherman, the new super trainer? This giant outfit. Moonlit Cove in there. And Shug actually in here too with Astaku Trail. Heartspun Philly making a third start, adding Lasix for her 3-year-old debut. This is a heady group. There's a Debbie Oxley Homebred too by Sky Mesa. Out of a Shadid mare, Melrose Morning making her third start, first on grass after two synthetic tries. North of the border, Starlight has got a Harlan's Holiday. Todd and Jack Wolf and Don Lucarelli and company. Psalmody. Psalm, Psalmody. Psalmody. So this is a hot, looks like a hot group. There's a third kitten in here too. Fancy Kitten. Kitten's Kitten, as we used to say. Then there's also an eighth. The eighth has got some seven furlongs. This is very, this is an important group. These are elders, 4 years old. The debut of Verst for George Strawbridge, the Medaglia d'Oro colt out of Informed Decision. It's taken a while to get going. There's also Honor Code, his brother, Morse Code. An important start, get Morse Code going. He's been just fair. He, second, third, and fifth most recently. Time for Morse Code to break through, but they're all facing preservationist, the arch colt, now four for Jimmy Jerkins and Centennial. 3-5? That's a little aggressive, but if he runs back to that race behind Bombs Away, it'll be tough. So look for that tomorrow. There's also a crazy race at Tampa we got to talk about tomorrow. Philly's probably your spot today, I think. I think that's your best bet. You also, though, you also have got a few others, including, well, there goes my list. It was here somewhere. I there's just too much going on here. I want to thank Steve Cook, Dr. Allday, John Sheriffs, Jimmy Toner, Joe Nevels. Thank Casey, who's been up now for 39 straight hours. It's Endurance Radio. Back with you tomorrow, 9 a.m. And we'll do the Wednesday thing. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Express Bet's fun, popular, and profitable Beat the Host competition is back. Register free now to compete Saturdays in January and February for $2,500 in weekly prizes, $25,000 in championship round awards, and $100,000 in Express Bet Showdown loot. Top any host weekly mutual total just once based on live $5 win wagers in 8 mandatory races to qualify for the $25,000 championship round. A top 30 finisher earns a seat in the $100,000 Express Bet Showdown, a $300 value each. Play it Saturday beginning January 7th to qualify for a $5,000 Beat the Host bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today to register for Beat the Host. Competition is limited to account holders only, and new accounts qualify for up to a $125 bonus. ExpressBet's Beat the Host. It's your chance to show everyone who's boss.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
They heard you, and they're doing something about it. What is it? TTEGames.net, the newest horse race contesting site on the planet. If you've never played handicapping contests, trust me, they have one for you. It doesn't matter if you're a novice handicapper or a pro. TTE Games has new, innovative games like Chip Control with live bankroll and No Stabbing Zone that puts an end to bombs. TTEGames.net features favorite tracks like Santa Anita, Del Mar, and other top tracks across the country. Believe me, these are fun contests you won't find anywhere else. That's because they're designed for players by players, like Michael Baychuk, the 2012 NHC winner, Barbara Boley, the leading female handicapper in the country, and Dr. Anthony Treza, who has won almost every major high-stakes game since 2014. It's skill-based contest play at its best, and everyone's welcome to have a great time. Check it out at TTEGames.net, a division of the Tournament Edge. Live it, play it!
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
What are most horsemen looking for in their equine athletes? Consistency. It makes the trainer's job a little easier if they know their individual horse's health ceiling. We at Biomedical Research Labs will guarantee that your horse will be at its own optimum consistency when using EPO Equine or Unlock on a daily basis. If after 45 days you do not see physical health improvements, we will gladly refund your money. To learn proper dosing or for more information, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880. EPO Equine and EPO Unlock.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Everything good in my life has come from horses. As a kid, stories of horses carried my imagination through time and space. As a teenager, learning to become a jockey, horses took me to America's storied racetracks. As an adult, horses gave me the opportunity to compete outdoors in a major sport and to provide a good life for my family. I hope that horse lovers like me will support the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, whether by adopting, fostering, or sponsoring one of the nearly 1,000 horses in the TRF's national herd, or simply by making a donation. If you love racing, or if you just love horses, please help the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation in its mission to find a good life for horses when their racing days are through. Let's give back to the horses that have been so good to us.